Blog Talk Radio.
This is an Open Talk Radio 313 Flash production.
However and whenever it is you may be listening, thank you for stopping into another fantabulous episode of the Take It Easy radio show, live here on Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, as well as live on our Take It Easy YouTube channel. Hope y'all are having a great, fantabulous day. Thank you to everyone who's stopping in, however and whenever it is that you choose to be stopping in here. We've got a really fun show planned for you today. We are going to talk about this fun story with Matt Campbell and the Lions, which I assume we will also get to when we talk to our boy Blake Jude later today on the IG Live. So check that out as well if you are a fan of our podcast. Of course, please download, rate, review, subscribe. Well, download, rate, review, follow. You follow on Apple Podcast now. So download, rate, review, follow on Apple if you are a fan of the work that we do here. If you found us here via the Take It Easy radio show, via Open Talk Radio 313 The Flash, or on YouTube, you guys are probably big fans of us. So thank you for the big support that you have given us. I think we're going to start off with our obligatory LeBron and Steph Curry talk, right? Because how often do we come into this show and say, we have to lead off with the events that happened the night before? And I know it's like 4 o'clock in the afternoon on the East Coast. You guys are already getting suited up for more epic games tonight, like the Battle of Florida between the Ice Cats and the Tampa Bay Lightning, as the Ice Cats try and avoid going down 0-3 against the Tampa Bay Lightning and getting swept out of the Stanley Cup playoffs despite having their best regular season in 20 years. Of course, everyone is getting excited about that. So I get talking about the night four events and doing like reactionary content is always a little bit of a downtrodden, a little bit boring, a little bit tedious, but I do have to say there is a lot of fun in going through some of this content like that, especially because I said on the radio show on Wednesday and I said on the podcast on Tuesday, we are not guaranteed any more games like this. Games where we have two stars of a previous generation, the two most recognizable faces of their generation, with due respect to Kevin Durant, the two most recognizable faces of a generation, LeBron James and Stephen Curry, still in their late primes, going up against each other. We weren't going to get a lot of opportunities to watch this again. In fact, none are guaranteed after the game that we watched yesterday. And boy, did that game deliver. That game was just like 2.5 hours. I got 2 hours. I missed the first quarter. But 2 hours of just bliss and euphoria and just reasons why you love live sports but don't get enough of it because not enough of the games actually hold stakes. And in order to get your supplement of dopamine-addicting stakes, you'd have to follow a whole bunch of sports and have the seasons not overlap like the NHL playoffs and the NBA playoffs do, or the NFL regular season and the MLB playoffs. So sometimes you just have the dopamine shots overlap, and that's just part of the process. And so the NBA playoffs are finally back, and we got one epic game last night. I said it on the radio show today, or technically yesterday, because we did post-game show Warriors-Lakers to kick off the segment. How often do we get epic games like that between the Lakers and the Warriors, and at the exact same time, you have all those great hockey games that are being put on the back burner, and you got to watch the game end, if you stayed up for it, on a legendary moment. Not only do we have a back and forth, you got to have it end on a legendary moment that we'll probably remember for a while, because LeBron hitting a 33-foot step-back shot at the exact same time as the Kyrie Irving shot over Stephen Curry. If that doesn't bring back the nostalgia, I don't know what does. And isn't a lot of LeBron versus Steph just about nostalgia at this point? Sure, it's about creating new memories, but as we talked about before, the Lakers were the 7 seed and the Warriors were the 8 seed. Like, these guys are very clearly aging out of being relevant NBA players, or at least relevant in the postseason NBA players. Obviously, Steph Curry won the scoring title last year. But we got all of that nostalgia wrapped up into one, and it delivered that epic game that everyone was so excited for, because the league markets those two stars, LeBron James and Steph Curry, really well. And they know how to put that in perspective for people, even as those two exit their prime, and even as we have AD and Jokic and Giannis and Joel Embiid, all of them coming for that crown and are entering their primes, and they soon will take the mantle from the older generation as the older generation ages out, like KD, James Harden, LeBron James, Steph Curry, Kawhi Leonard. As all those guys start to age out, you're going to start to see the new generation kind of mount itself and take shape a little bit. And so in the case of LeBron James and that game last night, we expect the Lakers will make a longer playoff run. I think the Lakers are huge favorites against Phoenix in the next round, which, you know, I think the Lakers will win in probably like 6 games, I would guess. Like, I do think the Lakers, when healthy, we know they're better than the Phoenix Suns, despite how good the Phoenix Suns were. The Phoenix Suns were also remarkably healthy this season. And Chris Paul had one of the best seasons of his career, which obviously helps the team going forward. And so, yes, we're going to watch those series and enjoy them, but at least for one day, on this one Thursday, here on the Take It Easy radio show, we can do reactionary content, because we got an epic duel between Steph Curry and LeBron James, and it made everyone feel just a little bit more excited about what was going on in the world of sport. Isn't it beautiful how all these things work out in the long run? I think it is. And just from an X's and O's standpoint, something I didn't talk about on today's pregame show for the podcast, but we kind of like to talk about here, the idea that the Warriors have become a top 7 defensive team at the behest of Draymond Green. I don't think Draymond Green gets quite enough credit in the grand scheme of things, because his stat line last night, I think, was like 2.7 rebounds, 8 assists, and 3 steals or 3 blocks or whatever it was. But Draymond Green has made them a top 7 defensive team in the NBA almost single-handedly, because I can't think of other great defensive players on that Warriors team. And the one play that everyone talks about with the poke eye from LeBron, the thing that stood out to me as I was watching that highlight over and over again was that Draymond took a 2-on-1, flipped over to LeBron. Yes, he fouled LeBron and denied the dunk, but LeBron went from guarding, I believe it was Dennis Schroeder or Caruso on the 2-on-1, was able to step into the lane on LeBron and deny the layup or any kind of basket at the rim, all without, like, committing a flagrant aggressive foul. Like, just put his hands up, went into LeBron's face, and it was a remarkable, remarkable moment for Draymond Green to play that kind of defense. LeBron ends up hitting the 1 free throw out of 2, and instantly that's a success for the Golden State Warriors, that you can go from being only down 1 instead of down 2. I forgot what it was at that point. But to be honest, just 1 out of 2 points from that transition where you have a 2-on-1 and Caruso is – you stepped up on Caruso or Schroeder. I can't remember which one it was. But then they spoon-feed LeBron, who's coming up in transition, and Draymond's going to step over and be able to defend LeBron enough to not only, like, step in front of LeBron from getting to the basket. And this is, again, LeBron for 2 decades almost – was the best player at getting to the rim in the NBA. About 15 years, he was the best player in the NBA at getting to the rim. He's not quite that anymore, and ankle injuries are obviously a bit debilitating. But for Draymond to step into the lane on that one, it was a great play by Draymond Green. It was one that's like kind of resonated with me this far. Obviously, it was the one that with the foul and the eye poking has kind of become the one that is getting talked about or would have been talked about had the Lakers lost the game, more so than the shot, which, you know, kind of corrects things in the grand scheme of things because the Lakers do end up winning that game. But Draymond Green's defensive ability was on tap for that entire game, and both teams were awesome defensively. The Lakers dared the Warriors to beat them with threes, and to be honest, for a short period of time, Juan T and number 15, whose name I don't know, I just kept calling him number 15 on the Warriors, and Bazemore and Jordan Poole and Andrew Wiggins, they were hitting their threes for a while there. So they dared the Warriors to hit three-pointers on them. They were going to deny inside. They were going to try and deny Steph Curry dribble moves. They were going to force Steph Curry into contested floaters. And Steph Curry finished with 36, which I thought at the time, if you went to like the over-under bets on that, which is just meant to design 50-50 bets, I'm guessing that if Steph did go over, he just barely went over on the point total with 36 points. Because I think we all expected that the Bel Air Academy offense would run through Steph Curry and he would just go nuts in that game. And it wasn't quite that. It wasn't quite what we expected from Golden State. And so when we look back in hindsight and see, hey, this is a great defensive game and both teams barely got to 100. And even though the Warriors hit a bunch of threes, they didn't really like have a lot of offensive rebounds or points in the paint. They had a few, but not as many. And the Lakers started the game shooting like 24% from the field. And Anthony Davis was 3-for-16. I actually said in between the third and fourth quarter on, I can't remember if we were on the live at that point or if it was just texting with my group chats. But the one thing that I did say is like, well, how do you fix it if Anthony Davis is 3-for-16? And you've got this dude, Anthony Davis, who can kill you in four different ways. It's one of the things that makes Anthony Davis so remarkable as an offensive skill player and why he was no question the number one pick in the draft. Because Anthony Davis can kill you four different ways. He's got four tools offensively. And he's got at least a three-point shot. He shot 26% this year from three. But he's got four ways that he can beat you, like, at an elite level. Like, LeBron James has probably four ways he can beat you, like elite offensive ways. He can drive to the rim. He can dunk. He can drive to the rim. He can shoot three-pointers. He can shoot mid-range jumpers. And he can body people inside. So he's got post moves. LeBron's got less post moves now. And obviously his driving ability is lesser than it has ever been. But those were the four ways LeBron used to be able to kill you. Anthony Davis is elite offensively in four different categories, and most players are elite in two categories. Steph Curry is elite when he drives and dribble moves, but that's for a point guard, which is different than LeBron on the wing or LeBron James on the wing or, you know, Kevin Durant on the wing. Being a point guard is different. But Anthony Davis has elite post moves. He's got one of the best mid-range jumpers in the game. Anthony Davis is genuinely, I think him and Chris Paul are like the two best mid-range shooters in the game. So he can shoot mid-range. He can shoot post moves. Anthony Davis can jump higher than you, like jump higher than anyone in the league not named Rudy Gobert. And I bet you him and Rudy Gobert could both get about the same. There was one play last year. They were playing, I think, Portland in the regular season. And I got a screenshot of Anthony Davis catching a lob, and no doubt his fingertips, where he just fingertips the ball and glides it into the basket for a dunk, his fingertips are touching 14 feet and like 8 inches above the rim. Above the ground. And the rim is 10 feet. So he's about 4 feet, 8 inches above the rim when he gets the ball with his fingertips and glides it into the basket. There is literally nobody in the NBA who can jump higher than Anthony Davis can and catch lobs higher than Anthony Davis can. So Anthony Davis can catch lobs. He has elite dribble moves. He He's got, or I'm sorry, elite big man dribble moves. He's got elite post moves, and he's got, other than Chris Paul, any position, most deadly mid-range jumper in the NBA. Kevin Durant's up there too, but he's kind of the long mid-range. Kevin Durant is the, like, the 24-foot mid-range. We're talking about, like, the 16, 17-foot mid-range. Anthony Davis and Chris Paul have the two best, like, free-throw line jumpers in the NBA, or from the wing, two best mid-range shooters in the NBA. And Anthony Davis can kill you four different ways. And when he's 3-for-16, and every time, there was one point they had Juan T on him, and the Lakers kind of were like, all right, let's work the ball into Anthony Davis. But it was always a zone double team. So Juan T would work on Anthony Davis. But if Anthony Davis started driving, then they would bring Draymond over for a double team. If he went baseline right hand, they would bring Draymond over to help. But if it was just him on Juan T, Anthony Davis would just step to his right and do a pull-up jumper over Juan T from like 15, 16 feet. And when it's Anthony Davis shooting 15, 16 feet, and the alternative sometimes is LeBron for three, open three-pointer for Wes Matthews, open three-pointer for Dennis Schroeder, open three-point jumper for Kuzma. Like, when those are your alternatives, you'll live, and especially when he's not shooting as well, if the Lakers' offense is going to be get the ball to Anthony Davis, and the Warriors don't have the size to match up because the only big guy they have to match up is Kevon Looney, and Kevon Looney cannot work with Anthony Davis for 31 minutes a game, what they do is they put Juan T on Anthony Davis and let Anthony Davis just shoot over the top of Juan T, because they'll live with Anthony Davis shooting 17-foot jumpers all game. Why? Because Anthony Davis can kill you four different ways. And if you're picking your poison between elite dribble moves, lobs, mid-range jumper, and post moves, you'll live with Anthony Davis shooting the mid-range jumper. And going 3-for-16 is the ideal situation, where he only finishes the game with 18 to 20 points, because you can win the game if Anthony Davis has 18 or 20 points and shoots 30% from the field or 35% from the field. But then what I was talking about in my group chat was going back to Anthony Davis right at the start of the third quarter. If he's 3-for-16 and the Lakers need points and Steph Curry's going to be on the bench, the best way to get Anthony Davis working, lobs. Lob, lob, lob. Let Anthony Davis get the best shot in the NBA, better than the corner three, better than Steph Curry shooting a three, best shot in the game within 2 feet of the basket. Just lob to Anthony Davis. Lob to Anthony Davis. They got one on a fast break, and they just threw one up, and he, like, caught it, turned his body midair, and two-hand jammed one. And they went right out the gate. Dunked by Anthony Davis. Dunked by Anthony Davis. I forgot how they scored the other one, but then right after Steph Curry came back in the game, dunked by Anthony Davis. They got simple with the offensive execution, spread out the Warriors' defense, and said, let's just throw lobs to Anthony Davis. Like, let's have LeBron to Anthony Davis lobs. Let's have Caruso lob one to Anthony Davis. Just Anthony Davis, get to the basket. We're going to throw it up, and you're going to dunk it because you're Anthony Davis, and nobody can reach up that high and deny you the basketball. It's remarkable how good Anthony Davis is at four different ways of killing you. And when the Warriors' defensive strategy executed to perfection, they had Juan T guarding him like P.J. Tucker did in the playoffs last year when the Rockets won that game one against the Lakers. They had Juan T guarding Anthony Davis for the Warriors, and whenever Anthony Davis drove, double-team him with Draymond Green. Double-team with Draymond Green. If he goes left, double-team, just collapse three, four people on Anthony Davis. The defensive strategy was extremely effective for the Warriors until the Lakers said, just go to the rim. Just, we're going to throw lobs and you're going to dunk the basketball or you're going to go to the free throw line. Just get lobs, get dunks. If he's not making shots, just get him the dunks inside, which you could do all the time, but Anthony Davis, at a certain point, people start to adjust, and they did adjust to Anthony Davis. I think Davis finished the game with, I want to say probably a few dozen points, I'm guessing. A couple dozen points. Probably he finished the game with closer to like 20-something because I know he didn't have a ton at the start. Let's see. Anthony Davis finished with 25 points on 10 of 24 from the field. So to finish the game, Anthony Davis went 7 for 8 from the field, and it was just dunk, 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 foul, dunk, three-point shot. So he hit one three-pointer. He was 0 for 5 before, then he hit a three-pointer, layup, mid-range jumper. So Anthony Davis went 7 for 8 to finish the basketball game because the Lakers just threw him the ball inside and said, just we're going to do lobs and dunks at the end of the game. And Anthony Davis, I think at the end had – I think at one point had like 12 points or 10 points and then had 15 or so in the fourth quarter. So they kind of just changed the game plan around and threw the ball into Anthony Davis. And to be honest, that was just enough to get the lead because those 3 minutes Steph Curry was gone. I'm not 3 minutes, 90 seconds. Steph Curry was out 90 seconds in the fourth quarter, and the Lakers had three dunks in a row. Anthony Davis had two of them. And it just it was fast-paced, run out of options. Warriors had to call timeout and get Steph back in the game. But that part was remarkable. It's something that I took away from the game very much so, was that Warriors' defensive strategy was only so effective against Anthony Davis. And it was something that I found interesting and other teams can take from, because if you're Phoenix, yes, you've got DeAndre Ayton, and you can stick another seven-footer, athletic, big, kind of good at defense, but you can just stick him on Anthony Davis. But would it be beneficial to put one of your smaller guys on Anthony Davis and dare him to hit those mid-range jumpers and then hope that you as a team can score enough points with your better offensive production than the Golden State Warriors that isn't just run the ball through the Bel Air Academy offense to Steph Curry? Like, you've got Chris Paul, you've got Devin Booker, you've got Mikal Bridges, you've got some dudes on the well, and DeAndre Ayton can shoot now, but DeAndre Ayton's gonna get. But if you're the Phoenix Suns, do you take a page out of that book and say, let's put Javon Carter on Anthony Davis? Now that's an egregious example. I don't think they'd ever like actively choose to put Javon Carter on Anthony Davis, but what if you put, like, one of your best defensive wings on Anthony Davis, like the Warriors did with Juan T, and then just have a double team with whoever your best defensive player is? I don't know who the best defensive player is for the Phoenix Suns this year. I don't know who has the best defensive rating for them, but it's that same idea. It's the same idea that the Warriors were working with. It was very effective in slowing down Anthony Davis. Isn't working. If you're 0 for 5 from 3, let's just get you the ball to basket. Let's just dunk, dunk, dunk. We'll live with the 2 points. Just dunk the basketball over and over and over, and we're all right with that. So I wonder if Phoenix adopts some of that game plan going into the next series. As you know, we've got all the playoff series set in stone, and by the time we come back here on the Take It Easy radio show, it's going to be pretty close to the end of those series. You're going to have a few games in. Hockey series are going to be pretty much close to done because they play four a night. Every night in hockey, they're just going two-a-days to kind of get through those playoffs right now and keep everything up to pace. So that one's going to be interesting too. But as Phoenix kind of takes on this series, it'll be interesting to see what direction they go with that one. But there's your X's and O's breakdown. That's the X's and O's breakdown I can give you from what I was watching. It was incredible to see Juan T play that level of defense in the way that they did. So there's your Warriors X's and O breakdown. All right, so I mentioned it off the top. I want to talk about this Lions and Matt Campbell story. Not Man Campbell, the Matt Campbell story for the Detroit Lions, who are now, like I said, the Detroit Lions, things are looking up for you. If you're a Detroit Lions fan, things are very much looking up for you at this point. Things are... You look like you have a plan. I don't know if that plan is going to work out, but it looks like at the very least, if you are Detroit, at least you have a plan. It looks like you have, at the bare minimum, a plan for figuring this thing out. And the Lions were, that is now being reported, offering Matt Campbell, the Iowa State head coach, an 8-year, $68 million contract to be the next coach of the Detroit Lions. And that one frustrates me that he turned it down, because I had said at the time, there is no more perfect hire than Matt Campbell and the Detroit Lions. It was the most perfect hire I could think of. And the idea that the Lions agreed with me because we didn't hear enough of a connection between him and the fact that the Lions gave him that 8-year, $68 million offer and he turned it down, which would have been, I think, double or triple pay raise based on his old contract. His new contract will pay him more. But the fact that he took that offer, turned it down, and he might be waiting for one of these good jobs in college football, it's a little bit remarkable for my taste, because Matt Campbell was someone that was connected to the Ohio State jobs. There's very much a reality there that he's in high demand, but at a certain point, those jobs stopped calling. And I'm amazed that he had the cojones to turn down that job in the NFL. And we've talked about this before on both podcast and radio, but it was a while ago. So I'd like to circle back around to something that we talked about with college coaches and college coaching jobs and things like that. There are about 12 to 13, we kind of figured out, 12 to 13 college jobs that are better than working an NFL head coaching job because of the amount of power and control, the salary, the ability to have unlimited financial resources and all that good stuff in there that relates to college football. There's about 12 to 13 college jobs right now as it presently stands that are better than NFL head coaching jobs. And it's Alabama, Auburn, debatable on Auburn, but you could throw Auburn in the mix there. Georgia, you could argue Florida. I would not put Florida in the mix. LSU, Texas A&M, Ohio State, Michigan, arguably Michigan State and Penn State. Both of those are debatable, but you could make the argument that Bill O'Brien left Penn State to go to the Houston Texans. So you could argue Penn State, could argue Michigan State. Maybe not right now with Michigan State because that job has not looked great recently, but you could make the argument at the very least. So that's seven. Oklahoma, Texas, Clemson, that's 10. Who am I missing? I would not say USC, but USC at its peak, maybe you could throw in there. So that was 10. With a debatable two to four. I said debatable Florida, debatable Penn State, debatable Michigan State. But 10, I can say with certainty. Alabama, Auburn, LSU, Texas A&M, Georgia, Oklahoma, Texas, Clemson, Ohio State, Michigan. Those ones I can – oh, and Notre Dame. Sorry, Notre Dame is number 11. Forgot about Notre Dame. Sorry, all you Irish fans. So that's 11, and then you can throw debatable in there, Michigan State, Penn State, Florida, USC, those are some debatable ones. Like, maybe better to keep that job when it's good to keep that job, but right now those programs are on a little bit of rocky ground. But some of them, like Texas A&M and Texas, it's all about the infinite resources, the fact that those universities give you infinite resources, infinite control. Texas probably shouldn't count on this list because Texas is – actually, I will throw Texas out here because Texas has – Texas has had some problems in the past few years. So I will throw Texas out and say that that's 10 if you count Notre Dame with a debatable 4. So, but Texas has the third most resources of any school. That's why the only reason Texas has a seat at the table is because Texas has the third most athletic budget of any school in all of college football. Number one is Texas A&M. Number two is Ohio State. So that's the only reason Texas has a seat at the table. So, with that being said, there's about 10 to 12 jobs in college football that are better than having an NFL job. And Matt Campbell might be holding out for one of those potential jobs. He was in connection to the Ohio State job. Maybe a Clemson or an Alabama job becomes available, but who's to say that they don't promote within their organizations and hire Matt Campbell? And this is the thing that's difficult, is that Matt Campbell is going to be back at Iowa State next year. And even if he had turned down that NFL job for whatever reason, didn't want to work for the Detroit Lions, turned down that NFL job for $70 million a year, which we know John Gruden's making $100 million a year, but we don't really know the salaries of a lot of these NFL teams. We know Urban Meyer was asking for $12 million. We don't know what Urban Meyer ended up getting from the Jaguars. But we really don't know the salaries of these NFL coaches very often. And so Matt Campbell turning down that big job was remarkable because it tells either where Matt Campbell views the Detroit Lions, which is funnier for content, if that's where Matt Campbell views the Detroit Lions, or where Matt Campbell views himself in the plethora of college sports and the realm of where does power reside with. It's a very interesting thing that Matt Campbell is going back and forth on. And so when I look at this situation, I think about Matt Campbell passing on Detroit as a catastrophic mistake in his career, because the other thing I connect to, and eras are very different here, but Jim Harbaugh went to the NFL and got another college job at one of these big programs, at one of these 10 to 12 big ones. He got the success in the NFL, helped him get that job. But even with Nick Saban, who in his career was, I believe, 14 and 18, if I remember correctly, maybe 15 and 17. There was one 7-9 season and one that was kind of around there. But Nick Saban, who was an average NFL head coach with a pretty good roster on the Miami Dolphins, ended up getting back to Alabama once that job became available, because the Alabama job is very much one of those jobs that is better than having any of those NFL jobs. And so he left Miami to go get those jobs. And Matt Campbell is no exception to those rules. Speaking of rules, if Matt Rules, who rules? Matt Rules. If Matt Rules ends up wanting to get one of those jobs, he could probably theoretically leave the Carolina Panthers to go take one of those big jobs if Alabama opens up in the next 5 years and they want to offer Matt Rule. If Oklahoma opens up for Lincoln Riley and he leaves for the NFL, which is another conversation we've been having for a while, is about why doesn't Lincoln Riley go to the NFL? Because Oklahoma is a cushier job than most NFL jobs. And the NFL legislates parity so well that one job that looks cushy now might not look so cushy a couple years from now. And there's this great article that we talked about in the past about this mass exodus of college coaches coming over to the NFL. That in the next generation, so 5 years, 10 years, in the 2020s, we're going to see a mass exodus of NFL, of college coaches wanting to get these NFL jobs. And the reason they want to get these NFL jobs is because of the changing landscape of college sports, that the NFL wants to start hiring college coaches again, and the changing landscape of college football makes it more enticing for some of these college coaches to move to the NFL, not because it's good or bad, but because it's a different college atmosphere than what they were previously used to. Sorry, needed a quick break there. But anyways, so back to this story with the exodus of college coaches. So something we're going to see in the near future is that mass exodus, and we're already starting to see it. The last 3 years, we've had a college coach get hired to the NFL. It was Cliff Kingsbury, and then it was Who Rules, Matt Rules, and then it's Urban Meyer, who's a different case because Urban Meyer was serving his punishment from college football, where after the Zach Smith thing, he kind of had to walk away at Ohio State, even though he had the interest in coaching again, but kind of had to step away in the moment. So Urban Meyer walks away there, and Urban Meyer is the third coach in the last 3 years to get an NFL job after, I believe, Chip Kelly was the last college coach to get an NFL head coaching job back in 2013. So they went like 5 years without hiring a college coach, and now they've done one each of the last 3 years. And there would have been two last year if Matt Campbell had taken the job with the Detroit Lions, which I feel, even with the state of the Detroit Lions and the fact that the Detroit Lions are going to suck next year and that the Iowa State Cyclones, who just won the Fiesta Bowl for the first time since 1960, never, are going to have their star quarterback, Brock Purdy, who might be a first-round pick, back for this next upcoming season. And if Matt Campbell had loyalty to those guys and that class, that he was going to ride it out and then take those jobs, it's an understandable choice if another NFL job is coming, which I don't know if that's the case for Matt Campbell because the NFL moves on so quickly. Matt Campbell had an opportunity because he's the trendy name, and he's the trendy name that gets thrown around every time one of these deals comes out. But there's only so many jobs you can turn down or not get before all of a sudden they just stop calling because it is such a cutthroat business where the results are demanded to a point where if Matt Campbell fails in Detroit, and he's going to be given plenty of time to succeed in Detroit, but if Matt Campbell fails in Detroit, he is probably not first in line for one of those NFL jobs. It took Chip Kelly, after being fired by the Eagles, it took him, what, 4 years to get another job? And 4 years later, he ended up at bum-ass UCLA? Like, it is so difficult when you lose to get back into the game. It's why it's remarkable where some of these runs like Nick Saban, where he had success at every single place he went, that's how it becomes a sort of legendary status, is because those guys fade so quickly. They always end up getting a second chance. I think Jim McElwain is still coaching over at Central Michigan. But at a certain point, the big-time jobs stop calling because there's new Matt Campbells. Matt Campbell and P.J. Fleck are the new guys taking the jobs that used to go to Gus Malzahn and Will Muschamp. Like, that is the changing tide of college sports and college football and the NFL, to be honest. The NFL, it retreads coaches more often than we think, but it's still a cutthroat business to get to the top of because there's only 32 of these desired openings. And the fact that Matt Campbell turned down the Detroit Lions job, I feel personally, and part of this has to do with my personal fact that for months and months I was saying, Matt Campbell to the Lions, Matt Campbell to the Lions. It's a perfect hire. Hire Matt Campbell. Hire Matt Campbell. The fact that he turned down the job feels like a gross miscalculation on his part because the worst-case scenario, one of those college jobs opens and they still offer you the job. And so if Matt Campbell gets another NFL job next year, whether it's with the Houston Texans or the Denver Broncos, I'm just brainstorming people who I feel confident their coaches are going to get fired at the end of the season, whoever it may be who has an opening at the end of the year, if he gets another offer and he takes that offer because Brock Purdy is about to go to the NFL, I think that that's an understandable choice that he makes. But if there's a loyalty to that class and it ends up costing him getting one of these jobs, even though he is in high demand, at a certain point you can't keep turning down the jobs because they only get offered so often. And this is the difficult scenario. And it's not like working for the Lions is an awful thing. Like, they ended up hiring Dan Campbell, which was clearly not their first option. It would be very strange if Man Campbell was their first option for head coach. But at a certain point, like, the Lions job may not be desirable for obvious Lions-esque reasons, but if you're Matt Campbell, who understandably has had a lot of success at Iowa State, he's been connected to the Ohio State job when Urban Meyer left, and he's been connected to Detroit in the NFL. Like, obviously there's interest in these jobs, but at a certain point, and he wasn't offered the Ohio State job. That's the other big part. It's not like he turned down Ohio State. They just did not offer him the head coaching job. But at a certain point, Iowa State, which, by the way, is one of those places in college football hellscape that is not necessarily ever going to be great because they don't have the financial resources to become an Alabama or a Clemson or an LSU. When you stick around at Iowa State long enough, the jobs stop rolling in. It's why P.J. Fleck had to take the Minnesota job when we all kind of recognize it's not really that desirable of a job. And I forgot about one other program that we could throw in the list, Oregon. Oregon is one of those jobs that is better than an NFL job. Being the head coach at the Oregon Ducks is better than being a head coach in the NFL. I know I was shitting on the Pac-12 a little bit. So if USC is debatable, Oregon is one of those jobs you very much want because Nike money. Consistently competitive and Nike money, Oregon is the place that you want to be in college football. And Mario Cristobal leveraged that Auburn job to get money to stay at Oregon, which is a smart job by him. Mario Cristobal throwing it back to those U days of the late 90s. Go watch the documentary. Mario Cristobal played for a bunch of those U teams. But what's interesting for Matt Campbell is that if you're holding out hope for an Oregon job, not there. If you wanted the Auburn job, didn't show interest in the Auburn job, obviously, if you turned down Detroit, he's probably turning down Auburn, too, because Auburn's one of those that's, like, teetering on the fringe of an NFL job. At this stage of the game, I know I listed Auburn as one of the 11 schools, but at this stage of the game for Auburn, you got to take the NFL job over Auburn, especially because they're going to be paying more. The NFL job, at $68 million, there's no way Auburn is offering you an 8-year, $68 million contract. There's just no chance in the world that Auburn is offering that. And so if the Lions are offering you 8 years, $68 million, you have to take that offer. It's an offer that, as great as Matt Campbell is and as much as he gets a lot of people, you know, to talking about he's consistently in the meetings and in the running for one of these top jobs, you can't turn down that job. Matt Campbell is not – as great as Iowa State is, like I just said, he took a bum program. We can pull up Iowa State's – I've done this like three times in the last year. Like Iowa State's win-loss records are atrocious before he gets there. But if you're – they just won their first Fiesta Bowl or New Year's Six bowl game for the first time since 1980 when – 1980 never – they've never won a major bowl game, which is really hard to do given how long college football has been playing at this point. But Iowa State, before Matt Campbell gets there, they had Gene Chizik there for a short period of time, and he gets fired. So he goes 3-9, 2-10. Then they come in after making a bowl game in 2012 at 6-6, and 2011 at 6-6, they go 3-9. 2-10, 3-9, 3-9, with finishes in the conference, 8th, 9th, 7th. Even the years that they made bowl games, they finish 8th and 9th. So they go 8th, 9th, 7th, 10th, last place in the Big 12. Last place, 9th, only worse than Kansas, only victory against Kansas, only victory against Kansas. And then Matt Campbell comes in, and it's what, 8-5, 8-5, 7-6. 10-3, well, 9-3 because of the truncated season, finished 9th in the college bowls. Like, they were terrible, and then they were good. They played in the Liberty Bowl. They played in the Alamo Bowl. They played in the 7th New Year's Bowl game against Notre Dame. They got killed, but it's still the unofficial 7th New Year's Bowl game in the Camping World Bowl / Buffalo Wild – or, sorry, the Citrus Bowl is the 7th. So they played the unofficial 8th, 9th biggest bowl game. Then they won the Fiesta Bowl. Like, he has really turned around this program. They've been consistently good for years now. But if you're Matt Campbell, you're not good enough to turn down the Detroit Lions job. As great as Matt Campbell has been as a coach, you cannot turn down the Detroit Lions job. Love you, Matt Campbell. Again, I thought it was a match made in heaven, and you broke my heart that you turned down the job. I thought it was the Lions' fault, but you turned down the job. As great as these offers are coming in, you can't turn down the Detroit Lions' job. It's one of the 32 in the NFL, and unless one of those 11 jobs that we mentioned is coming up, I don't know which one's the next one to become available, if it's Alabama, but even I think he's not good enough, that job, or Clemson, or they might promote within the organization if Saban retires and Dabo goes to Bama, but I don't think it works. I don't think it works out for them. And Dabo and Saban and Lincoln Riley's going to be at Oklahoma for a while. I could see him going to Oklahoma if Lincoln wants an NFL job, but Lincoln's got one of those cushy jobs. And so I'm looking around the landscape. Cristobal just got an extension at Oregon, so he's going to be there for a while, which, by the way, Matt Campbell did just beat Oregon in the Fiesta Bowl. Like, not to, like, diss Matt Campbell. Like, he's an amazing coach doing it at a school that is not, like, at any kind of level like that. So Matt Campbell has been awesome. But, Matt Campbell, you cannot pass up that Detroit Lions job. It's just at that amount of money, that's the other thing, at making you one of the higher-end paid coaches in the NFL, 8 years of job security, you cannot pass up that Detroit Lions job. If they're going to guarantee you 4 years or 5 years to try and build this thing out, you got to take it. You just got to take it. All right, we got 15 minutes left here on the Take It Easy radio show. We kind of talked about this a little bit when I mentioned LSU there, but the LSU Bengals, I put that down on the repertoire of something I wanted to talk about, and I was trying to make these these T-shirts that we're trying to make, and you can buy some over at the Take It Easy merch store, which you can find in our bio descriptions on Instagram. About if you, and it's one of my favorite lines here, if you're going to ruin Joe Burrow, at least let Joe Burrow play with his homies. And Ja'Marr Chase and Thaddeus Moss are now Bengals, and Zach Taylor is going to get fired, and they'll hire Joe Brady. And then Justin Jefferson is going to sign, and then they're going to trade for Mike the Tiger and all that fun stuff. But anyway, the point of that being, the LSU Bengals, which I like to call the Cincinnati Bengals this year, it's going to be a fun little season for them. And Joe Burrow appears to be 100% go into next year. And I'm fascinated because I feel like the Bengals aren't going to be that good. And we can talk about this more with our buddy Blake Jude. He obviously is a Bengals fan and covers the Cincinnati Bengals. But it's so interesting to see the Bengals game plan around how can we get out of the rut of mediocrity. And I don't know if they have enough this year, especially at a time when the AFC North, we know all the teams in that division are better than them, and great as Joe Burrow is, we kind of know all the teams in that division are better than the Cincinnati Bengals, and this is a weird developmental project. We know Joe Burrow is awesome. We know the rest of the team is emphatically not awesome, but they've got more talent this year than they did last year, and so we expect that they'll be better, but everyone else has more talent this year than they did last year, and so the Bengals are in a difficult position that I want to believe that they can be good. I'm reassembling the LSU Bengals, but I know Zach Taylor is going to get fired. And maybe if you want to hire Matt Campbell in the Bengals, then Matt Campbell might reconsider. But the Bengals are just a notch up from the Detroit Lions in terms of the last 25 years of organizational competence. But at the very least, the Detroit Lions got a new ownership group. The daughter of the previous owner has now taken over full time. So at the very least, you have a new ownership tactic in the fold for Detroit. At least you have the promise of something new happening and an organizational direction. Like, looking at the Lions now, it's going to be a long road, but at least they have an organizational direction. With Cincinnati, you look like they have an organizational direction, but I don't know what the ceiling is for the Bengals team. It feels similarly to the Jets, where you've got some talent coming in, but I don't know if it's enough to win more than 5 or 6 games. And so it's difficult to kind of pin down the Cincinnati Bengals, like where they are in the rebuild or where they are in that process. And I think laughing at the idea of the LSU Bengals is a great way to go about content, because it's what keeps the Cincinnati Bengals interesting. At least you can let Joe Burrow play with his homies if the Bengals are just going to be a catastrophic train wreck, no matter what it ends up looking like. So maybe it'll work out in the long run for them. I think that's our show, ladies and gentlemen. I don't have much left here. There's no great baseball on, so I think we'll call it here and reconvene next week, people. So with that being said, thank you to everyone who has stopped in here over the past few weeks. We much appreciate it. And as always, take it easy. Talk to you again next week.